think it's publicity, right? Please, no publicity. Actually, several of you requested me in little notes if I could share with you the text of these prayers that I'm sometimes chanting and that my teacher used to chant every time he would teach, at least this, much longer than this usually. And the chanting at the beginning, at the end of a session of practice or of teaching is actually a practice in itself. It's developing the motivation, the restating the commitment, connecting with all sentient beings, and then at the end with the dedications, again connecting with all sentient beings, offering whatever good has developed in the meantime, offering it to them. So Gendun Rinpoche would call this the three seals of the practice. The opening with the take going for refuge and the bodhicitta, including the four immeasurables. The main practice developing insight. In order to be a liberating practice, it needs to contain an aspect of insight, aspect of knowing reality, otherwise it's not liberating. And then there needs to be a dedication really to complete awakening. So he would call these three seals the three seals of an authentic practice. An authentic practice would be one where you can be sure that it leads to awakening. Okay? You can't be sure if the motivation isn't set on awakening. If one is, for example, motivated simply to have a good time, is not then the energies are not going in the same direction. Or if one is motivated by some form of self-interest. Yes? So that's why the motivational prayers, going for refuge, Buddha Dhamma Sangha, the Bodhisattva vow, plus the four measurables in the beginning, are extremely important to set the tone for whatever practice we are doing. Now, in the main practice, and that can be anything, you could be hiking in the mountains, you could be doing whatever your practice is, yes? But in that, in order to be liberating, there needs to be an aspect of opening up to just how it is. Yeah, the insight aspect, the wisdom aspect. Without that, we simply continue in the likes and dislikes. It needs to have that insightful aspect of opening beyond our habitual patterns. Even if the habitual patterns are of wanting to stay in the dhyanas, in the samadhis, and then it still doesn't lead to enlightenment if there is no insight there. Yeah? So that's another seal, the second seal of the practice. And then at the end, to dedicate and to offer it to the awakening of all. And after that verbal dedication, that is a non-verbal dedication of resting in, you can say, open nature, natural being. You can also say resting in non-self. So actually, after having practiced, we disown the practice. No one has practiced. It's offered, it's done, no one identifies. So we free the practice from the mechanisms of reappropriating this wonderful practice by our pride, for example. the spiritual ego that thinks, oh, you know, so many hours of practice, such a deep samadhi, so much love, and I was really doing good. Dedication means dedicating on the relative level for the welfare of beings, and on the ultimate level, no one has ever practiced realizing that. And no one is doing any dedication. Yeah? So, this is the third seal of the practice, which is wonderful. Then, when we respect these three seals, we know motivation is really set as a good starting point. Main practice is to the point. Dedication is again to the point. And the point is always that open, can say non-dual being, it's awakening, it's natural being, different names. Yeah. Depending on what tradition you come from, you can call it different names, but it is that. Yeah? That which is unnameable and has many names. Yeah? That. Okay. Now, since you asked, I'm not going to give a complete explanation of these prayers. That this wasn't the purpose. Also, I never thought I would teach them to you. I just share them with you. So whatever is left open and unanswered, just leave it as that. Don't try to figure it all out. These are good questions. Yeah, good questions that you have. Live with the question. Okay? Don't get yourself all entangled about, oh, I don't like this word, but I prefer that one. And can't we change here? You know, the typical make it yourself, do it yourself way. No, this is an old prayer, you know. It's translated as good as it can be. You know, these are prayers from the Indian tradition, and they're at least 1,000 years old. So leave them as they are. Okay? Relax. Relax, relax. Okay? So, and that's why it's nice to sing in Tibetan, because then you don't think so much. I was singing them in Portuguese with my Brazilian students, in French with my French students, in German with my German students, in English with my English students, in Greek, you know, and so on. Now I would have to probably start in Hebrew and Arabic, you know. Yeah, and it became too much for me. My mind can't take it. I go back to Tibet. No one understands, and that's better. You understand because you have the translation. Okay? Like this. So I will sing them now, of course, but you don't even have to follow. You can relax. If that's not your, as we say, your cup of tea or your pint of beer, you know, whatever, as ever you want to express it, then just relax with it, and maybe you just tune in to the good heart behind it. I remember my 3 years of intensive, very intensive Vipassana practice. My girlfriends were always into Tibetan Buddhism. But only the third one, whom then I married, she really got me. And, you know, then it started for me with Tibetan Buddhism. Really. But all the time, I was just listening to these practices, to these mantra recitations, these chants, these same prayers, and so on. Yeah, just listening and doing my silent practice. I was so attached to silence. I was thinking, why always this chanting? And so just silence is enough. Later on, I understood. Silence is a good way to stay in one's own way of seeing reality, of one's own little corner, one's own little meditation. So, okay. While I recite these prayers, actually, I invite all sentient beings to listen. Okay? Because this is not a closed group. There are so many invisible beings, and they also want to listen. So I invite them at the same time as we are reciting these prayers. Normally, there are extra prayers of inviting them. And to tell those who intend to do mischief to stay at a certain distance, to listen from a distance. Yes? So, if you like, you join. If you don't, just go into an open space. Sangye Chön Dan, Sangye Chön Nam Lan, Chön Chön Badun Dan In Kyeb Sun Chi, Dagin Chin Chön Chin Pe Se Nam Chi, Jo Lam Pen Chi Sangye Chön Pasho. Sang yin che dan so gin cho nam lan chan jom pa dun dan e kyab sun ji. Da gin chin so chin pe se nam jin cho lam pen che sang yin jom pa shu. Sang yin che dan sang gin cho nam lan chan jom pa dun dan e kyab sun ji. Da gin chin so en chin pe se nam ji. Njon lam pen che sang yin jom pa shu. Sem chen tam chen de wa dan de ven yu dan dem pan chu jim. Dun nen dan dun nen ji ju dan de wa chu jim. Dunna men pen deva dhamma dhammen dhava jaji nirin chandan hidan dharva channam champola nempa jaji sem chan tam jen deva dan deva judan dhamma jaji dunna dan dunna ji judan dhava jaji Dunna mempen deva dhamma dhammen dhava jaji. Nirin chandan nidan dhava channam champola nempa jaji. Sem chan tam jen deva dan deva judan dhamma jaji. Dunna dan dunna ji judan dhava jaji. Dunna mempa deva dhamma dhammen dhava jaji. Nirin chadan nidan dhaven tannam champola nempa jaji. And the last one is the one with the blue Buddha. Remember the visualization with this blue light? So I will explain you the other visualizations another time, but this one we will need for the meditation afterwards. So those of you who like, you can connect to the essence of awakening as a Buddha above yourself, as blue as the sky. Sky blue, radiant with rainbow light. And the two arms are crossed, symbolizing the unity of compassion and wisdom. And this Buddha is looking at us, smiling, very kind, with all the qualities of awakening. The legs are crossed. And this primordial Buddha represents, you can say, the heart essence of all awakened ones. Can have a female form, can have a male form. Actually, it's just a form of light. And then as we recite this little prayer only once, then the connection becomes stronger. And at the end of this prayer, this blue Buddha dissolves into light, which dissolves into us and melts into our heart and settles down there as a little blue Buddha meditating. Veden Sarve Lama Dempo Chin Dangin Chi Wom Penden Den Shula Kajin Chen Pengonin Je Son Te Kusun Tugin Enjum Tsandu Se. And the blue Buddha dissolves into ourselves. And we connect to the essence of awakening in our own heart. And we allow for this awakened nobody to meditate. You know, the meditation of a Buddha is nothing special. So don't produce something special. You can imagine her just sitting under an olive tree, simply being. And as the Buddha is sitting there, the Buddhi in our heart mind begins to see reality with the eyes of awakening. Relax into your seat. Really relax, like the Buddha would relax. Just taking that posture that is the most convenient one. And then becoming still. I said these few words that we look at reality with the heart mind of the Buddha, of an awakened person. Now, of course, that opens the question, what is real? How does a Buddha perceive reality? What's going on there? And some of your little notes were inquiring about that. So there's a good way to describe that. It's a very good way. Imagine we sit under such a tree somewhere. Okay, we just take it as a time. We could also sit here. Yeah, why not sit here in the hall? Oh, it's very good. So the first thing that comes to our mind when we sit here, eyes open, ears open, you know, hearing, seeing, feeling the body, listening to a teaching. The first thing is conditioned reality, the conditioned aspect of reality. It's very clear. It's the coming together of factors that make for a conditioned experience in the body, conditioned experience of hearing. You know, depending on how good our sense of hearing is, we hear a little bit differently. Depending on how good our understanding of English is, we understand a little bit differently. All of this is conditioned reality. Yeah, it's like, but it is reality. It is an aspect of reality. Okay? Something is happening through our senses and also in the way we deal with what is arising that is obviously conditioned by many factors. The situation of now, for example, we would be hearing much less if the air conditioning were put on very strong. Yeah, it's another condition. If people were not keeping quiet, we would hear less. We would. So many conditions, yeah? Just for the hearing, then for the seeing, the same. For how we feel the body, how the body feels today, what are our illnesses, what are our strengths, and so on. Our upbringing, our interpretation of the world, yeah? Then we come to something more. So conditioned reality is something that we can explain with causes, conditions, creating together, you can say, the experiences of now. And for us, that was as human beings, with the same basic karma, the basic propensities of being human beings, much of the conditioned reality is overlapping. Yeah, we have similar sensory experiences here in the room, okay? Similar basic situation. There's a lot of overlapping there. And we cannot separate it from the second aspect of reality, which is called imaginary reality. Imaginary reality is all of what we make out of that. For example, I don't feel comfortable, I need to sit up, and I decide to sit up. Depending on my way of dealing with things, I can be a little bit angry that I have a pain that I can't sit down, or I can take it with complete ease and equanimity and simply do what's necessary, right? Different reactions. So to some, this room might be too dark. I heard one person saying, not complaining at all, but one person was saying, I cannot see your eyes when you are in the meditation hall, probably because it's too light there. So maybe they want to put on the lights. Different reactions, you know, different wishes. All of this is in our personal construction of reality. It's the so-called imagined or imaginary reality, which is not a negative term. We cannot do without that. We have to interpret reality. Yeah? If I'm asked to like pass on. Can you pass me the clock? Yes, then I have to know. But this is like an agreement. It's an interpretation to call this thing a clock, right? So language already is interpreting reality. Communication is always a way of choosing a limited amount of what we want to communicate, because we just can't communicate everything. So there's a selection and interpretation and a way to understand what is being communicated. All of that is the vast realm of imagined reality, and it is a reality. However, it is very personal. It is more personal even than the conditioned one. Yeah? The conditioned one has more overlaps, although our personal conditioning is different. But when we add the interpretations, the emotional reactions, whatever we hear, you hear me say one thing, you immediately compare it with what other teachers have said. You know, I don't know what I trigger in your minds, you know. Yes, no, but, and, you know, and all of this, whole worlds open there. All of this is real, yet it is very personal. And we have much less overlap. You cannot probably you know that your neighbor is not living the same inner experience than what you are living. Probably you are in a different state than your neighbor. Yeah, it's like, and this is the subjective, but yet we don't use the word subjective, we use imagined, because it's a constructing aspect of our mind that constructs from the bits and pieces of sensory information, of the input of the situation, and from what is coming up by itself from previous, you know, input experiences, then things are coming up by themselves. How we deal with all of that, this is the imagined aspect of reality. So this is a And then, that is at the same time is what we call the ungraspable aspect of reality, the ultimate nature, sometimes called, but actually that's that which is always there, the empty, ungraspable, continuously changing, very dynamic nature of reality. That is always there. Okay, it's a nice way to explain. So I was asked in one note, but seemingly yesterday you said that our emotions are not real. How about the suffering in Gaza? Isn't that real? And of course it's real. Of course it's real. It's the combination of these three aspects of reality. Definitely. It's real. And it is changing. Of course, it is changing. Yes. Definitely. To say that something is changing and that there is an important amount of mental interpretation, of emotional work, you know, in how we experience reality, that doesn't mean it is not real. It just means it's not substantial. Okay? Big difference. Don't confuse real and substantial. Substantial means solid. It's not solid. It is always in the way of being constructed and reinterpreted and getting bigger, getting smaller, getting more intense, it's all the time. It's dynamic. Reality is dynamic. So, dynamic reality has always this, you know, when you feel in the situation of now as you are listening to these words, there is this atmospheric, ungraspable nature. You get it? You can feel it a little bit? Yeah, it's like, it's so real. We know exactly that this is happening, yet it's not solid. Can't get it. Can't say it's like this. It's a thing. No. It is as it is, a dynamic process, okay, of being in this room with a guy who talks without end. Okay. That might get on your nerves, but that's the way it is. Okay? Because that's like, okay. Then, what's the imagined, this is the conditioned aspect, sounds arriving at our ears. Huh? Sounds, and then sitting in this room, maybe not enough air, maybe enough, maybe too cold, maybe too warm. Who knows? Yeah. Conditioned aspect, underlying ungraspable nature, and then my own emotional work with that, my weaving it all together into my personal world of what I experience. Some are very happy, extremely happy. Others say, oh, maybe I should have done a solitary retreat. Maybe I'm in the wrong place here. Maybe. You know, I want silence. I need silence. And yeah, maybe that's good. Maybe that's the wrong place. But this is a different world. You understand? Different worlds in the so-called same situation. But there is no same situation. Nowhere in the world. Two people experience the same. Nowhere ever. Yeah. You can have been bonding so much, you can have had the best sexual exchange with your partner, you fall asleep, you dream different things. Yeah. The bonding can be so wonderful, so intense, and like all limits have dissolved. And then you find yourself in different sleep, in different dreams, in different ways of waking up. And yes, you get that? Okay, and even during the experience of feeling so united, yet it is a little different for each one. So, this is what I explained to you about the three aspects of reality is a little treasure I'm passing on to you. I hope you took notes. It's the background of the Mahamudra teachings, okay, is how we communicate what reality might be. No one claims reality is like that. But it's a good way to describe that at the same time, with this very clear experience of now, that is not only its ungraspable empty nature, that empty nature is the empty nature of what is dependent arising, conditioned reality, plus the personal experience of that. And the Buddha sitting under the tree, you know, that famous tree, which is always called the tree of awakening, so we can put ourselves under that tree, this Bodhi tree, we can think we are sitting ourselves there. The Buddha would be aware of the birds singing, yeah, and would take care not to sit under coconuts completely ripe because they would fall on his head. Yes? He would be aware of dependent, conditioned reality. Would maybe be smiling, and that's his personal, subjective, imaginary reality, smiling at, you know, and whatever he sees and feels, would in his mind have maybe the lives of different people appearing, maybe a remembrance of the talk yesterday would arise. All of that would arise without the least grasping. Because there is the awareness of the ungraspable nature. So a Buddha is not supposed to be without thoughts. Simply there is no grasping in the thinking process. If a Buddha didn't have any thoughts, he couldn't answer questions, right? He couldn't even understand them. Okay, there must be mental movements, which we call thoughts. However, these thinking processes are not of a dualistic nature. They are not of a dualistic nature, which means they're without separating subject and object. There's no separation in the experience. There is a possibility of having mental activity without creating a center of gravity, the so-called me, yeah, around which all the planets of the universe then should do their turns, like we think everyone should turn around us, everyone, refer to us. No, there is no such center appearing in the mind of awakened beings that communicate with us. Okay, you get it? The three aspects of reality, none of them has to be preferred to the others. There has been a big error to think that the so-called ultimate nature, which is the only one that lasts all the time through, yeah, this is always present, that this would be a better one than the other. Or the misunderstanding, okay, I take the ultimate one plus the conditioned one, but definitely no interpretation of what happens. Definitely nothing subjective, only objective. Then we can't communicate. Every language, every sentence is an interpretation, giving meaning from one thing to another. You know, like a coconut falling on your head, to find out where it comes from. This is interpretation. This is creating connections. So to understand cause and effect, all of that is not inside the experience. It's a connecting mind, an incredible, beautiful thing of our mind being able to understand. We need that. We need to be able to observe that an emotion arises due to certain forms of identification and how it dissolves on its own. This observation of something now, something before, the capacity to compare these two events and to see the logical sequences of that, that is all very, very necessary. So don't try to play any of these aspects of reality against each other. Just liberate them from the clinging to solid reality and the clinging to someone somewhere in the center of all of that. Yes, that's an error. That's not to be found. There are many forces which create this form of belief, this feeling of a self, yes, but sometimes we forget to create the self and then suddenly we are without. So, world continues nevertheless, no big deal. And it continues even better. So, okay? Good way to look at what is real. And happiness and suffering are equal in that respect. There's nothing which is more real than something else.